Good morning and welcome back to the Roundtable. Our tech guru, Jesse Feiler, joins us this morning as he does each month to discuss cool things in the tech world. This morning we're going to talk about coding and fun ways to learn coding. Jesse Feiler helps people and organizations get to know and use new technologies. Projects have included building the page, a caching module for the Prodigy web browser for Mac in the very early days of the web, location-based apps for iPhone and iOS, as well as books and classes on new technologies. Current projects involve using apps and FileMaker databases for identifying and managing risk in nonprofit organizations, as well as helping small communities build location-based apps to promote tourism, downtown economic development, and the wise use of natural resources. It's always a pleasure to welcome Jesse Feiler to our program, and this morning is no exception. Good morning.
Good to be here.
Very nice to have you with us. So we're going to talk about something about coding, and then ultimately how we teach coding and what we should know about coding. Before we go there, what is coding?
What is coding? Is it's a very good question because we keep changing the terminology. It used to be called programming.
Okay.
And before that, it was actually called coding. It's writing the stuff that makes our devices work.
Okay.
As opposed to building the devices.
I was thinking of this last night. I was getting ready for the segment, but I was thinking about this because I was waiting for my wife to come out of a convenience store, and I started playing on my phone bowling. And I had the little bowling ball, and you flick it with your finger, and it goes up. And I'm thinking, you know, somebody made it do that because the bowling pin came smacking back down halfway, and then rolled back and knocked out three pins. And I figured, well, somebody had to make it do that, right? And that's what's so incredible about this stuff.
And what's even more incredible?
Did I mention I was really bored waiting for my? Go ahead.
What's even more incredible,
yes,
depending on the specific app that you're looking at, is that you said you roll the bowling ball and
you kind of flick it, and then but the one, you know, normally as it would in a real game of bowling, the bowling pins would go down, right? And then so you think that, okay, well, I would understand that would be a part of the code of how the game would work. In this particular case, one of the pins went up in the air, fell down on the side of the alley, bounced back up, went into the center, and then rolled and took out two more pins. And I thought, well, so someone had to make that happen. It's not just like it's nature that you hit this, it hits that, and
now
you understand what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
And was it believable what you saw?
Absolutely.
Do you know who writes code?
No.
On a project like that?
No. You?
Or who?
No.
Or who participates in the writing of code?
Bowlers.
Bowlers, physicists.
Okay.
In building something like that, and I don't know on this specific one if they did, but many of them are doing this, they want to make it look believable, as realistic as possible, so that when you get into things where water is flowing, where you're blowing up something and suddenly there's a leak and water is rushing down a street or something, physicists and people like that are looking at that and are helping the people who write the actual computer code do something that looks believable and accurate, which then leads to another interesting thing, which is that, you know, some people say, oh, we don't let kids or people in the library play computer games. You know, we don't want these computer games. But when the computer games, it's very hard to draw the line between teaching and gaming.
Yes.
So the answer to the question of who writes the code is a coder writes the code, but relying on expertise from bowlers, physicists, and
so a lot goes into it.
Oh yeah.
And it's lucrative, right? I mean, you can get back what you put into it, I assume, by paying a physicist and a bunch of bowlers and the person coding it.
If you look at the statistics, and one of the biggest source of statistics for most people is appannie.com. If you look at that, you'll see that it's not a flat curve, it's not even a bell-shaped curve. Some developers and apps make a ton of money. Angry Birds,
yes,
and Pokemon come to mind at
right
the moment. Most do not make a lot of money. Most developers don't make a lot of money, but
Do they cover the cost? I mean, does it break even in the fact of paying for the people and the time?
It really depends, because a lot of apps are not commercial.
Right.
So, do you do any online banking?
Yes.
Okay, you use an app for that.
Yes.
Do you pay for that?
No.
Okay. That app is developed by the bank. It's
right.
part of their overhead. They may put it under overhead. They may put it under marketing. It doesn't matter where they put it. But that app has to be built. If you're doing a financial institution today, you have to have online banking.
Right.
So they need the app as part of their business. So that whole area of apps doesn't make money directly, but it's one of the biggest parts of apps.
So if we were to have a club called Future Coders of America, what would that club right now look like? Deafening pause.
Well, I'm visualizing it, and I'm trying to translate that into something that I could say coherently on the public radio waves.
All right.
I would say, and I actually do believe this, and this is, to the extent this is where it should be going. What would the club Future Coders of America look like?
Yes.
It should look like the people in the country.
Okay.
Because I believe that apps are basically communications tools. I mean, when you're bowling on the app and waiting for your wife to buy the milk, I'm not certain that's so much a communication tool in that particular case.
Time killer.
Yeah. But the... I've never met her, but I'm sure she's a very nice woman.
She's very nice. She is very nice.
But you can say that the online banking app is a communications tool.
Right.
You could do that with a phone call or by actually going into the bank.
Yeah.
So a lot of it is, a lot of educational stuff is communications. I think it's a communications medium. And what people are doing when they're trying to get more and more people involved with coding is they're trying to do two things. One is to address the need for diversity among coders, because until even today, most coders are men and of a limited age range. So we're trying to get more people involved. And that there's a big enough effort on that it is starting to happen. We're certainly getting more women involved with it. But there's a long way to go. But it's a communications medium, and it's something just like spelling or writing or being able to draw. If it's a communications tool, it's something everyone needs to learn.
You have on your website, but also, which we'll give that out at the end, but you have a link there to a code studio, and this is where kids, is code.org, and kids are being taught how to code. And the course one is ages 4 to 6.
Yes, that would be 4 to 6 years of age.
Right, not 4 to 6 years of experience, 4 to 6 years of age.
Yes.
Okay, so just post-toddler, pre-kindergarten in many cases, or kindergarten, and they are being taught in some way for early reading to code. Now, what do they learn in that, and what are they able to accomplish? So their coding accomplishes what in the end for them at that young age?
They learn the basics of programming. It accomplishes two things. They learn the basics of programming, and it scares the daylights out of older people.
Of course. It scares me. Now, this
so two very productive things.
Absolutely. So now this is in a fun setting. These are through games, through various exercises, and you are able to do this. But it's not like you're sitting there cracking the whip saying, oh, you have to code this. It's a fun exercise in doing it.
Yes. And coding is fun, even when you are struggling with trying to track down a bug for 3 days and tearing your hair out, if you have any hair, which you did before you were
right. before you started coding.
Whatever, the whole thing. But it's still fun. It's like doing puzzles all day long.
So do I have to be, let's say, so that's course one, and then it goes six to 18, and then 8 to 18, and 10 to 18.
I think it's the second
courses.
One is 6 to 8.
Okay. Says 18, but okay.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, so now my question being, that makes much more sense. 6 to 10, and then, or 6 to 8, and then 8 to 10, and then 10 to 18. Okay, got it. So when you look at these courses, what are we being, what sneaky things are we teaching these kids? I mean, obviously coding, but is it mathematics based? Is it problem solving based? What was it based in?
It's we've actually undergone a major, by the way, the people who are behind coder.org, if you look on their website, it's Microsoft, Apple, Google, I mean, Salesforce. It's
okay.
A zillion leaders.
So this is sort of the C-SPAN of coding.
This is one of the two.
Okay.
But if you what we're doing, we are starting in all of the coding tools that we're using now. We used to teach coding the way most people learned it, which was in the evolution of coding as it was built, starting from the 1940s. Here is the simplest line of code you can write. Now, the next thing we'll learn is how to write two simple lines of code, and then you build and build and build up. And then you gradually put them all together into structures that are called blocks or functions or procedures. And that's how we've been teaching it, and that's how most of us learned, because that's how these languages evolved. What we're doing now with these things is we're starting from these chunks, the blocks or procedures of code. So what we're teaching is the kids and adults, when we're teaching coding now, we say, okay, the first thing you want to do is you want to use this block which will cause the bowling pin to roll straight ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Here's another block that causes the bowling pin to veer off to the right. Here's a block that handles a bowling pin hitting another bowling pin. And so coding takes these things and puts them together. And what the kids are doing and adults are doing is there, instead of starting by writing one line of code that says print hello world, which believe it or not is how most coding classes started, they're thinking about how do I put this block together with that one? How do I say that, okay, if this ball hits another pin, I then need to execute this block of code. So they're thinking at a higher transactional level, if you want, rather than writing line after line of code, which is not what we're doing today.
You use the word language. Is that essentially what it is?
It is a language. It's a language, but we were actually teaching coding linguistic as if it were a language. Here is a simple sentence. Here are two simple sentences and so forth. What we're really teaching now with these blocks and procedures and functions are more like writing, not language, like putting paragraphs together, like having topic sentences and that sort of thing, which is more than just the language. Does that make a little bit of sense?
Yes. I'm curious as to if I have a 4-year-old and I put him into a 20-hour course on coding of what kind of kid I'm going to get.
Probably you're going to get back the same one you put in. Unless the coat, you might confuse the coats or something like that.
Right, but I mean,
there's a joke in there somewhere.
but meaning that there, it seems like once they realize what they're doing, they can be very proficient and very smart at that.
And they can learn once they learn this way of thinking logic. It's a way of thinking logically and say okay, and this, by the way, this way of writing code, looking at blocks and functions that you put together so that the writing of the actual language that's within these functions and procedures is secondary. This is very hard for people who have been in the business for 10 or 20 or 30 years to learn. They want to go to the code.
And it is, and I assume it's a lot easier to learn if you've learned as a kid than it would be, like many things, than it would be if you're, you know, 32 and sitting down and trying to learn this stuff.
Well, it depends. If you're 32, if you wake up every morning and say, what can I learn today?
Okay. Well, yeah, I understand.
You know, but you know, yeah, but it's difficult.
I was thinking about the general technology curve that we have as we get older.
Yeah, but one of the things that coding and working with computers and technology teaches you is that you have to get up every morning and say, what new is going to happen today? Or what new am I going to do today?
So the idea, and in our final moments, we have about 2 minutes left, of the difference between coders and designers and developers in the front end and the back end.
When we talk a lot about web pages, because web pages are becoming smarter and smarter, so people are writing code for web pages.
Yes.
And we tend to talk about front-end developers, who are the people who are doing the graphics on the web page, and the back-end developers, who are writing the code that makes the page move.
Okay. So, but it's all these people working together to get this
Working together as harmoniously as all groups of people work together in this world.
Right. Human nature still comes into it.
Yes.
Of course. Jesse Filer provides consulting services to small businesses and nonprofits. His website is northcountryconsulting.com. Northcountryconsulting.com. You have a lot of links up there, a lot of good information for coders young and old.
Yes.
And very good stuff. Northcountryconsulting.com. Jesse, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for being
good
with us.
Good to be here.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.